Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Paddock Project. Joining me today is everybody's favorite duo, the one and only Matt and Tommy from P1, all the way from the UK. Welcome to the podcast. Thank you for joining me to recap what was the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix.
Thank you so much. It's great to be on. We don't do all too many sort of podcast visits, so this is exciting. Thanks for having us on. It's an awesome thing what you've got going on. As I was saying before I just came on, that my girlfriend's been chatting about what you do. So it's cool to be featuring in an episode.
Oh, I love that. Well, she'll enjoy listening to this one, I'm sure. But before we dive in, I'm sure you're a familiar face to most, but I would love for you both to introduce yourselves, your platform, maybe tell us your F1 origin story and how you got into the sport and who you cheer for. I know we have some merch on the call, but...
Yeah, we have merch, but not the right merch if I'm talking about who I like. All right, I'll start, Tommy, because I usually do, don't I? And then I'll go to you. So my name's Matt, Matt Gallagher. I'm one half of P1 with Matt and Tommy, the worst half. And essentially, we've been in the F1 motorsport creator space, whatever you want to call it, for many, many years. We worked for a big brand before creating our own one called P1, which is mainly sort of podcast heavy. We're on YouTube. We do watch-alongs as well, which we enjoy massively, where we have people ranging from one day's experience of Formula One all the way through to having watched since the 90s to essentially just live and breathe the sport with us. We're just two Formula One fans that for some reason have a microphone in front of our mouths and people listen. So yeah, we love Formula One to the absolute core of our beings, and it's a dream job for sure.
Oh yeah, definitely. I'll echo that. So yeah, I'm Tommy, the other half of P1, and it's a crazy thing to kind of basically be full-time just talking about Formula One, because like Matt, grew up, Formula One is, you know, my entire personality and has been since I was a very young kid. Absolutely obsessed with it, long before it's now the kind of popular sport that it is today. I remember, you know, being the only one at my school that liked Formula One and had no one to talk to about it. So it's great that now people are finally getting into Formula One and for some reason enjoy listening to me and Matt talk about it.
And I probably should add as well, because you did ask, I am a Charles Leclerc Ferrari fan, even though I'm wearing Mercedes today. But if a team or a, you know, Adidas or whatever send me free stuff, I'm going to wear it because it's quite nice and I like Formula One. So, but Charles Leclerc all the way.
And I'm Max Verstappen all the way.
Yeah, I do see the lion lurking in the background there.
Had to be done. Straight from Zandvoort.
It's funny what you said, Tommy, because I feel like we're living through that renaissance of people finally getting into Formula One here in the States now, which is a long time coming, and it's nice to have people to talk to about the sport finally. I am a relatively new fan, joined probably throughout the pandemic, but it's been an absolute pleasure to dive into the sport and all things F1. It's a crazy, crazy world, and as I was telling Matt before we hit record, it is not a fun time being a Formula One fan on the West Coast because our time zone is tough over here.
I bow down to you. Bow down to anyone that has poor times to watch races, because I think if I grew up having to set my alarm for like 5 a.m., I think I'd be watching cricket right now. I don't think I would have touched Formula One. So
we grew up with maybe like 17 races and about 13, 14 of them were in Europe at about 1 o'clock on a Sunday afternoon. So you had it so lucky, and then we have the cheek to complain that maybe three a year we have to get up above like 5 a.m. for or something.
You poor thing. How do you do it? So Tommy, I know you have a daughter. Is she a Max fan as well, or are you letting her spread her wings and choose her own?
Well, she's still very young. To be honest, her level of knowledge right now is basically watching and just enjoying the BWT car, the pink BWT car in any series, whether that's F2 or Formula One.
That's
the one that always grabs her attention. So I think she's a rare Alpine fan, mainly due to the BWT pink.
Well, she wasn't so happy this race then, I'm sure.
No, difficult one for Alpine.
Well, let's dive into Saudi. I have to say it was a great race for me. I loved it. I thought we had amazing on-track battles, some really fun storylines. We have a new championship leader. Overall thoughts on the race for you both?
Oh, who do you want to? Because this is where me and Tommy, you know, usually on the podcast, and it'll be like we're having a sheet that says M, then T, and then T, and then M.
All right, let's
start
with
T. How do you want to do this? Okay, we're starting with T. Go, T.
Okay. I thought it was a decent race. It's a little bit disappointing after Bahrain that we kind of had a one-stop strategy again. But I think we are a little bit spoiled because I've watched Formula One for so many years, and you know, you used to basically barely see a single overtake the entire race. Then I've kind of gone through the years of maybe the you know, mid-2010s where it was absolute carnage and the tyres were shredding and everyone was doing about 5 pit stops and it was like crazy action. And now it's kind of a bit more the other way. But there's still plenty of action, you know, people overtaking. You had the drama of the first lap. It's certainly not a bad race. You know, you had the storylines there for sure. And it's just nice to see a championship fight again, because it's easy to look back just 1 year ago and think that Max Verstappen was so clear. We're thinking the championship's over. Is he going to win, you know, every single race again? You fast forward 1 year and you're almost relying on Max to kind of make the title interesting in a way to fight the McLarens. And, you know, you've got 3 drivers very close in the championship, even 5 races and a sprint in. So, yeah, absolutely here for it.
Love that.
And then I would say that the race was kind of underwhelming from my perspective, just purely if you take out the Turn 1 controversy, which sparked a huge amount of discussion. It was a 2.5-3 second gap between most cars because they can't follow. And it was, I think it's mainly because I compare very quickly to sort of 2022 when we first had the new regulations that we're currently in, and you had Verstappen versus Leclerc. They were chopping and changing positions. They were staying within a second, and that was what the new regulations were always supposed to be. Is, oh, we're gonna be able to overtake now. They're gonna be able to follow. Yes. And then you fast forward only 3 years, and we're again talking about drivers not being able to follow, and the strategy was very sort of one stop medium hard or hard medium for a few of the drivers. So yeah, it wasn't the best. And I think with as well that the overtakes felt very motorway passy a lot of the time. There wasn't a lot of side by side action, because then as soon as we went side by side, people corner cutting turn two. So yeah, it was better than Suzuka, that's for sure. I think anything is better than Suzuka. I think Monaco last year definitely rivals as the most boring race we've seen in recent times. But yeah, it was fine. I think it sets up the championship still beautifully. 12 points separating the top 3. Sign me up.
Yeah, absolutely. We had that glimmer of hope with Lando Norris and Lewis Hamilton going back and forth a couple times. But after that, I think it sort of fizzled out. What we always do on the podcast is we talk about our MVPs and LVPs of the race. And I would love to get into that. So for me, my MVP, I think we'll go through, I think, step by step what happened during the race at some point. But just to give a shout out at the top to Carlos Sainz for the teamwork and keeping Alex Albon in his DRS so that they could secure that double points Williams finish. I was saying, I think, to a friend that I understand why James Vowles kind of woke up and went to sleep thinking about signing Sainz all the time. Just that level of teamwork and his ability to think of the team in those moments and secure that double points. Williams is off to the best start of the season since 2016, I believe. So that's great for them. So that was for me.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it, that Sainz, he said at the end of the race, I think we had enough pace to keep Hadjar at bay anyway. I don't know if Albon did. I think Sainz did, and he wanted to make a point on that final lap when he just left Alex for dust to set a really fast lap right at the end. But I think Alex was very grateful to have that DRS to keep that 8th and 9th for Williams. My MVP, for those of you that know me, it will not surprise you in the slightest that it's Charles Leclerc. And that's not just from fandom and, you know, being completely and utterly delusional in my love for him. It genuinely is, I think, one of the best races I've seen Charles in quite a while. Just purely that Ferrari is 3rd fastest car potentially, at least around Saudi it was, but he did a brilliant stint. The strategy team, both him and Ferrari, were working really well together, made the most of the clean air at the sort of end of his medium stint, went longer than anybody else did on the mediums. And that's not just a given. You don't just have tires left at the end of a stint after following in dirty air for 20 laps. That's a skill. Yes, I'm going full fanboy right now. but he did a phenomenal job. He literally finished 8 seconds off the win. So for me, that was a point where I go, wow, okay, this was a really good third place. But then there's also a part of me that's incredibly competitive and, you know, wanting not just myself to do well in things, but also the people I support, and going, wow, if he'd actually sort of qualified on the front row of the grid or even led the race at one point, he could well have won that race because of the fact of how difficult it was to follow in dirty air. So Charles Leclerc, my MVP. Thank you very much.
I hate to agree with Matt, but yeah, Charles Leclerc, definitely one of, if not the drivers of the race, I think, to deliver what he did with that Ferrari. Just to be different, I'll go Oscar Piastri, because I know he's driving the best car on the grid right now. But I think for him to deliver that drive again, you know, he's had such a good start to the season. He's taken the lead of the championship. And you don't see many drivers, I know it's the controversial first one incident and it is only lap one, but you don't see many drivers go wheel to wheel with Max and end up as the kind of beneficiary in it. Particularly not something that kind of Lando's had in the last few years, for example. And Oscar's kind of showing that he doesn't feel any kind of pressure, it feels. And he's gone into another race where, yeah, he's just delivered and got another victory. His move, I think it was Hamilton when he was coming through to pass him after he'd pit, was so brave. You know, he's got the speed, he's got the mental side, he's got the racecraft. I think he's just driving so well. And I genuinely think he's a really good shot at the championship this year. And it seems like he's the favorite now, which is a crazy thing to think about. if you wind back, you know, even last year, you'd have said, you know, Oscar Piastri, the favorite for the championship, saying this time last year would be an insane thing to mention.
Yeah, it's absolutely wild. And we're not even a quarter of the way through the season, so there's a long way to go, but he's certainly showing that he has the chops to do it, I think. I want to unpack a lot of what you both just discussed. Maybe let's start with Charles, because I completely agree on his performance this race, and he's been knocking on the door of the podium for the past couple races, and he's finally been able to break through there. I'm curious what you think about his performance so far this year at Ferrari, especially as you think about in comparison to Lewis Hamilton and how he's fared so far in the Ferrari car, and what that says about both of them potentially as drivers. Because I think that was a big debate coming into the season, is how do we think about Charles versus Lewis? Lewis obviously had a lot of catch up to do in that car, but what are your thoughts so far on Charles this season versus Lewis Hamilton?
It's been kind of a tale of two halves, really. At the beginning of the season, especially after China, I'm thinking, goodness gracious me, Lewis Hamilton's rocked up to Ferrari and he's quicker than my boy. That was my initial thoughts. But the big thing for Ferrari, which has kind of put Charles on the back foot slightly as well, is the fact that they've changed so much of their car from last year that it's not just Hamilton learning, it's also Charles in terms of the limits of the car that he can go to. And we saw the struggles that he had in those first few races trying to get a grip of this Ferrari. So, you know, at the end of the year, I'm sure we will discuss whether Ferrari should have, you know, overhauled their entire car design for this year with only 1 year in the regulations before we then change again in 2026. But in terms of Charles now, I have a lot more confidence that we will begin to see that same driver that can get a pole position out of nowhere and to start delivering on that same level, especially after the last couple of races. You don't normally see, when you talk about Lewis Hamilton, him losing to his teammate by half a minute by pure pace and speed. Like, there wasn't much different. Of course, Charles did a slightly different strategy by going long on the mediums, but realistically, that was Charles just being quicker. So I am quite confident, I think, for the rest of the season that Leclerc will be able to maintain his level of performance. It's just whether or not Hamilton can learn quickly enough to catch that deficit up, because it's quite a big one from this weekend.
I think Leclerc had a disappointing start to the year, definitely, because I know the car wasn't there. A lot of people going into the year, I think, because based on the end of last year, there was a lot of people saying, you know, it's anyone's title this year. The McLarens, Max is always in there. And Ferrari, there's more than a few people saying Charles Leclerc or Lewis Hamilton could win the world championship.
Including me.
Including you. Yeah, exactly. but we've gone into the new year and the car clearly isn't there. You know, it's even slower than the Mercedes, which is, a tough pill to swallow for Lewis Hamilton, yeah. Who's left them, which looked such an amazing move halfway through last year when Ferrari looked quick. But now it's looking like the Mercedes is better. It's not worked out for them. And I think Charles had quite a kind of mediocre start to the year where he wasn't maybe over-delivering. And I know how much of a great driver he is. We've seen it so many times. And I think the last few races, particularly this one and Suzuka, you kind of seen more from Charles where you go, yeah, he's absolutely got the maximum out of that car, even though it's nowhere near the McLaren right now, but he still managed to, you know, put it on the podium, for example. And those drives show that I think when we do see a Ferrari finally get it right, you know, the classic meme of this is our year, tick it off every single year. Finally, when they do get it right, and if Charles is there, I have full confidence that he can deliver and is world championship material. He's just not had that yet.
Checks in the post, mate.
Yeah, it makes me worried for 2026 with the big shift and overhaul in the regulations, but we'll see. With Lewis, it's tough, especially Carlos also out qualifying him in a Williams. This race was not a pretty sight.
Back to back, I think now, wasn't it? It was the last two races he's out qualified Hamilton, yeah. Which is
it's
crazy.
It's a big story, isn't it? To think that Carlos's was such a demotion going into the team that finished second to last in the constructors, and it feeling like such a kind of kick in the teeth for, because at the end of the day, Carlos didn't leave because he had done a bad job. It was because they had to make room and it was never going to be Charles, like I think Carlos even said himself. But the fact that he's managed to out-qualify Hamilton in the last couple of races, and yeah, Hamilton's form last year, was a bit of a worry towards the end of the season, and so far it's kind of struggling to get up to speed in the Ferrari.
Yeah. And it's not like Carlos is hopping into a car that he's familiar with or even a power unit, even though he's driven on half the teams on the grid. He's never driven a Mercedes power unit. So good on him for improving, I think, this quickly. I want to chat about something you mentioned, Tommy, the penalty going into turn one, lap one. And you mentioned it from Oscar's perspective, but I'm curious as a Max fan what you think of the penalty for Max, that 5 seconds, and whether or not that was deserved. Was it more than it should have been, less than it should have been? What are your thoughts?
It was deserved. I've seen so many Max Verstappen, fellow Max Verstappen fans on Twitter share screenshots, and even Christian Horner himself trying to print out a picture. You can't share. There's video evidence. You know, you can take screenshots from so many different videos and present it and go, this looks like this. But the fact of the matter is, you watch Max is on board and he's too hot into the corner that he's not making the corner. He's going too fast into the corner that he's run off himself. Even if Oscar wasn't there and you simulate him doing exactly the same kind of braking as late as he did, because he wanted to go for the move. I understand why. Because he knew how important it was. But he wasn't making the corner. So that for me is slam dunk. What I don't agree with is this whole give them 5 seconds, they can kind of make their own decision whether they give the place back or you get a penalty, because then drivers can weigh up whether it's an option. And we've seen with the dirty air how crucial it is being ahead. You know, when do we get to the point where people start just cutting corners and going, well, actually, I'll take the penalty because I'm not going to lose 15 laps stuck behind this guy. I'm just going to cut the corner and thank you very much. I'll have the 5 second penalty because in the overall race, it's quicker. And I think for that, it should have been a penalty, but I do wish they'd just have a bit more common sense and just make them swap positions rather than having to give out time penalties and things like that.
Yeah. Matt, do you agree on that?
I agree that Max absolutely deserved a penalty for the move. It's there's quite a few different layers to to what went down, you know, first and foremost, I completely agree with the whole screenshot thing. I went on a little rant on it, actually, one of our videos on YouTube, where a screenshot tells none of the story. It tells absolutely nothing. The only screenshot that is decent to look at is when they're both at the apex. You can see Oscar has a slight nose ahead. Every other screenshot is irrelevant. You know, Max being slightly deeper, further into the corner is irrelevant as a screenshot because he's gone in. A screenshot
doesn't show speed of a car.
Because he's gone in 20 mile an hour too quick and he's never making that corner. You can see with his steering lock, he doesn't turn out of the corner until at the very last minute and then turns right to cut the corner. It is absolute, in my opinion, categorical proof that he is not making that corner. And that is one of the three rules that you need to tick off when going side by side around the outside and trying to make a pull off a move. One of them is that you have to make the corner. And he didn't. So it is a penalty. I saw that the stewards gave him a 5 second rather than a 10 because it was turn one, lap one. For me, it just kind of ruins the race before it's even begun. You know, everyone's so excited. And maybe this is talking from more of an entertainment perspective than a sporting perspective, but it's so disappointing to see a driver who's leading the race have a 5 second penalty and you go, well, Oscar's got this in the bag now. It's as simple as that. For me, I would just love to be able to see the stewards say, we deem you at fault, swap the positions back with Oscar, or you get slapped with, and then like a bigger penalty. Like the order should be that they have to swap back positions. Max has not only gained the position and a bit of time advantage, but he's also gaining the advantage throughout the whole of the first stint because Oscar has to follow in the dirty air. And we saw Oscar even falling back towards the end of the first stint where it got a little bit close as to whether or not there was going to be Max was going to be able to keep the lead. So then if that had happened, we'd be talking about this even more because it actually affected the outcome of the race. But thankfully for McLaren, they had the great idea to go for the undercut on Max to make sure that Max did not get track position. But Max was fully worthy of a penalty, in my opinion. And seeing his visible upset on the penalty was quite strange in my mind. Of course, he probably felt aggrieved, but it more to me felt like he was upset and angry about the fact he hadn't won from pole position when the win was definitely there.
I've actually seen a lot now that it might be because he had the pleasure of talking to everyone's favourite member of the FIA, MBS, who was chatting to him after when he was very angry. And I think Max himself has said that, you know, unfortunately now the FIA for some reason want to kind of stick tape over the mouths of these drivers and not let them speak and allow their opinion. And I think that is what Max was so annoyed about, that he couldn't actually, you know, give his view because it's the FIA have now written rules into the sport to say you can't disagree with us, which is absolutely insane.
Yeah, it is absolutely wild. It's something we've been talking a lot about on the show, just the FIA in general, both the crazy prioritization of rules, the inconsistencies with which they hand out penalties. We started to see some cracks showing with Robert Reed resigning. What do you make of that decision? Do you think that things are going to be changing at the FIA at any time, at any point, especially with the elections coming up? Or is this sort of status quo and the level of power that they have currently is not going anywhere anytime soon?
All we've seen is carnage. The very small window that we get into what's going on in the FIA is basically who's resigning, who's being fired. And it seems like everyone's resigning or being fired in some form. And it does spell, in my opinion, you know, not a good future for the sport due to this sort of dictatorship level that is going on at the FIA. You know, MBS, Mohammed bin Salam, seems to be putting things in place to ensure that he cannot be overruled. And it's like, what year is this? It's absolutely outrageous. So it seems like there is a worldwide disdain for this man, whether it's the fans, the drivers, the teams. And that's when you know something's probably not right.
It's kind of matching up with the politics of this world that the kind of people are rather than the person in charge being someone that's doing the good of the sport and the people involved in it, you're just kind of the person in charge is clearly like an absolute egomaniac who's just bothered about his own legacy and his opinion. I mean, I saw the other day that the medals that they give on the podium is signed by MBS, the FIA president, which is...
I'll chuck that in the furnace.
Yeah, exactly. And he, you know, it's not about you. And I think even when it was the prize-giving ceremony and Max was there getting his world championship-winning trophy, I'm pretty sure he grabbed the mic at one point and was like, by the way, this the FIA thing wasn't our problem and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, it's not a healthy situation to have the FIA being booed at an event full of Formula One fans. It should be, because this is an organization that have actually done so much for the good of the sport and, you know, introduced the halo and things. And the FIA used to be something that we kind of praised for the safety of Formula One, how much they've done for it. And that should be what they do. It shouldn't be this war, basically, between Formula One, the drivers, and the FIA. And, you know, they're doing it in Rally as well and all the other series they're involved in. And they just need, it needs to stop being a dictatorship run by people that are just absolute egomaniacs and obsessed with themselves. They need to then have a bit of empathy and understand what, you know, listen to the drivers. They're the ones that are, you know, risking their lives and delivering the show for people. So they should be listened to.
MBS has said several times that he's also a driver. So he is basically a driver.
The driver of the golf cart. Around the paddock.
The driver that crashed his Formula One car into a wall during a show run as well. So, yeah.
No, I completely agree with everything you're saying. And I think it undermines the credibility of the sport, really, at the end of the day. And it's just, it completely does a disservice to all the people, not only the drivers, the formula, the people behind the teams and working on the cars and everything, kind of dedicating their lives to this sport. Where do you think, how do we get out of this? Is it, do you think the elections will pose an opportunity to lift ourselves out from under this rule, or is it more sinister than that potentially?
My sort of feeling is it's more sinister than that, and that there is no quick remedy, as it feels like there are a lot of roots ingrained in into the FIA that might take a little while longer to figure out. But you know, one, I wouldn't say potential solution, but obviously something that is always on the table is the FIA and Formula One break away from each other. And you know, the drivers are done with the level of which they're being censored and this, that, and the other. And the question then is, you know, can Formula One do it themselves? That I think is literally the big red button. That's the nuclear launch for the sport. I don't think it should and hopefully won't get to that, because there's no saying that it'd be any better if that was to happen. But yeah, I think, you know, we're calling it elections. I don't think there's any other than one person.
I wonder who's going to win. It is. And unfortunately, that is, I think it all does come down to, you know, it's all power and greed and things like that that is running that organization. And could they break away? You know, I am of the opinion that if you had someone like Sebastian Vettel or Susie Wolff or someone like that in charge, they would be so much better and, you know, listen to drivers' feedback and understand what they want. They are empathetic people and, you know, they seem to kind of understand and they kind of put their egos aside and things. And, you know, that could be a solution, but unfortunately it doesn't seem like it's going to be the case. It is just a case of whether they are going to, could they do a breakaway series? It's something that kind of been talked about before, but unfortunately it's so difficult for them to do because the FIA do control so much of the sport.
The 100-year agreement would be tough to break away from that.
Yeah, definitely.
This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Therapy should feel accessible, not like a luxury. Kind of how F1 is making its much-needed transition from untouchable to relatable. With online therapy, you can get quality care at a price that makes sense and can help you with anything from anxiety to everyday stress. In the past, for me, it's always felt so cumbersome to figure out how to book a therapy appointment, find the right person, get to their office. One of the best things about BetterHelp is it's fully online. They match you to a therapist based on your needs, and they have over 30,000 credentialed therapists with a wide range of specialties. Your well-being is worth it.
Visit betterhelp.com/paddockproject today to get 10% off your first month. That's betterhelp, help.com/paddockproject. Has the last F1 race got your stress levels through the roof? It might actually not be Ferrari's strategy or papaya rules. It might actually be your hormones. That's where Happy Mammoth comes in. They offer a free 2-minute quiz that can help you uncover the root cause of your hormonal symptoms. It's super easy. Just answer a few questions about what you're going through and where you're at in life. And the best part, after taking the quiz, you'll get a personalized recommendation to help balance your hormones and start feeling better. I personally took the quiz, and one of the recommendations I got was to start Hormone Harmony, which helps with bloating, fatigue, weight gain, and more. And after adding it to my routine, I've definitely noticed a difference. So ready to start feeling like yourself again? Head over to happymammoth.com and take their free 2-minute hormone quiz today to find the ultimate answer to your stubborn hormonal issues. And for a limited time, you can also get 15% off your entire first order with my code PADDOCKPROJECT at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use code PADDOCKPROJECT for 15% off today. Even if you think it's a bit overhyped, AI is suddenly everywhere, from customer service to Formula Auto racing. If it's not in your industry yet, it's coming fast. But AI needs a lot of speed and computing power, so how do you compete without costs spinning out? Time to race to the next generation of the cloud, Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is a blazing fast and secure platform for your infrastructure, database, application development, plus all your AI and machine learning workloads. OCI costs 50% less for compute and 80% less for networking. That is a lot of prize money. Thousands of businesses have already upgraded to OCI, including Vodafone, Thomson Reuters, and Suno AI. Right now, Oracle is offering to cut your current cloud bill in half if you move to OCI for new U.S. customers with minimum financial commitment. Offer ends May 31st. See if your company qualifies for this special offer at oracle.com/paddock. That's oracle.com/paddock.
Okay, well, one name we haven't mentioned so far, which is an important name, is Lando Norris, especially this weekend, who was leading the championship and his teammate is now leading the championship. He obviously had that incident during quali at the beginning of Q3 where he lost it over the curb, sent it into the wall at turn 5, brought out the red flag, ended his qualifying, so he started P10. He did have a good recovery drive, not quite the podium, but he was close. What do you all make of his performance? I know that he and Oscar now have the same number of wins. Now, that's not necessarily a fair statistic. Obviously, the McLaren, when Lando started, is not the McLaren it is today, but I think it's interesting nonetheless. And obviously, I think the conversation between Oscar versus Lando for the championship will be one we're having all season. But I'm curious what you make of Lando's performance thus far this season and your thoughts on where this could be headed.
I think it's been a very disappointing season for Lando, because we went into the final race of the season. He drove that great race in Abu Dhabi, and you know, maybe it's a case of the kind of hyperbole around us being in the UK and our UK coverage, but everything you heard from the TV that we watch and everything is like, Lando's the favorite. He's going in. He's going to be number one this year. And on that as well, he kind of alluded to the fact that there's a lot of questions over the end of last season. Could he have done it? Should he have done better? Push Max further, because the McLaren was very good at the end of the season and probably could have done it. And he made a lot of mistakes. And then he went into this year, drove a great race in Australia, and we thought, okay, he has ironed out these mistakes. But already, correct me if I'm wrong, and please do, I can't think of any other driver this year that has made as many mistakes as Lando, from going into the races. We had the China sprint that was really poor from him. We've had the crash in Saudi, had the mistake in Bahrain, and even his race in Bahrain where he came through to the podium. So many errors, out his grid box, struggling to pass people and making kind of hard work of it. And it's disappointing, because he's an unbelievably quick driver, and he's got the speed. He just doesn't seem to have that mental side to the sport where he can resist the pressure. And not everyone can be a kind of Max Verstappen that just, I don't care, you know, and he's kind of like, has that attitude. But there needs to be something where we had a discussion on our podcast about this, that does he need more of a mentor like Oscar Piastri has with Mark Webber, for example, or other drivers do? Because it is a thing. You can't say it's not a thing now that he's making too many mistakes when the pressure is on. And this year, the pressure is more than ever because the McLaren is the quickest car. He's been given a world championship winning car. He's the driver with the most experience and the favorite going into the year. But it's not gone well for him so far.
It's been tough to watch. You know, I want to see Lando do well. I've known him for many years, and he's someone that I categorically think is one of the fastest drivers on the grid when it's his day. I think he has the edge over Oscar Piastri on his day, but sadly I'm having to add the on his day part, which he's not having enough of them at the moment to beat out Oscar Piastri in this title fight. Now, he can make mistakes, and he has made mistakes, and he's only 10 points behind with 19 races to go. So as much as this is a talking point, he can very easily reset and do well now. I am very much of the opinion he's a confidence driver, and as soon as he gets into his rhythm, he could easily win 2-3 on the trot. It's just about picking up that momentum, and I thought maybe he might have got it out of Australia after getting one over on Max, but he just hasn't been able to pick it up, and there's been a lot of talk about he's just not as comfortable in this car, and we do see him a lot of the time in the media saying the car's not as quick as everyone thinks. And you have to take what the drivers say, of course, but then you have Oscar Piastri occasionally disagreeing with him. it's definitely more of a mental thing for Lando, I believe. He just needs to be able to shut out the noise. And, you know, with the interviews that he has, you know, you see him, you know, get quite agitated by the fact that they constantly keep asking him the same question about the car and the performance and this, that, and the other. But I do have confidence that he will bounce back. As I say, he has the fastest car. I think he will have the fastest car throughout the whole year. It's just about, in my opinion, beating the driver in literally the other side of the garage to you, and Oscar Piastri. Max is going to have peaks and troughs. It's tough for Lando, but he has the talent. He just needs to be able to deliver it on a consistent basis.
Yeah, I agree with that. And it's tough comparing him from a mental perspective to someone like Oscar, who, yes, is younger and less experienced, but is probably one of the most unflappable drivers to exist. And so I think that's a tough comparison to Lando. We were talking last week on the podcast about how it would almost be better if they weren't teammates. Like, I think for Lando, it would be interesting to see what it would be like if he had a teammate that wasn't the caliber of an Oscar Piastri. But what do you think McLaren does from here? I mean, we've seen many races them trying to sort of sort out the team orders and the team rules over the radio. And that was when Lando was leading the championship and maybe had some more momentum. But the momentum right now does seem to be in Oscar's camp. Now, that can obviously change any race. And to your point, when Lando is on, he is incredibly on his day. But how do you think McLaren deals with this, or do they deal with it at all? I feel like they haven't necessarily dealt with it in the past.
They do nothing, in my opinion. Yeah. They will just let that cook and just see what happens. And they might well end up burning both of the stakes and Max Verstappen wins. But right now, they constantly, you know, Zak Brown constantly says they're both number one drivers. I think there was a strange interview where he basically said, yeah, it's inevitable that they're going to come together at some point. And it was just like, okay, right. Is that the attitude we're going with right now?
Yeah,
that's
weird.
Kind of bizarre. I mean, from a fan's perspective, I want to see them race. I want McLaren to just sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. But from when you take it at a completely different perspective of do you want to win both championships? You have to at some point make a decision. Their reluctancy to back Lando last year was baffling, in my opinion. Oscar was mathematically basically out of it. McLaren had the fastest car, and you're like, well, just put all your eggs in Lando's basket. But it just felt like they were, oh, if, as long as we win the constructors, that's a successful season, guys. Hooray. It was a very bizarre feeling. But I they might well get away with it just purely from the performance of that McLaren. But we have, you know, important parts of this season, such as the directive that's coming in for Spain. That might well change with the flexibility of the front wing and things like that. You know, that might change how fast they are. We don't know exactly. So this could well be a part of the season that McLaren have to bag as many points as possible to be able to fend off a Max Verstappen charge towards the end of the season. You can never discount Max.
Yes.
And I hope for McLaren's sake that they don't regret backing a driver at some point during the season when it makes mathematical sense, like a 50, 60 point gap between mm-hmm. the two of them, which is very possible in a couple of races. Lando or Oscar has a few terrible races. It can change very quickly.
McLaren have done that in their history so many times before, and sometimes, you know, even lost a championship through it. And the thing is that you go back to Mercedes, where it was Nico Rosberg and Lewis Hamilton that were absolutely miles clear of the field. They were going to finish 1-2 in every single race, and they did let them race because it didn't really matter, and no one else was even had a prayer of being anywhere near them, so they had that luxury. And while as Formula One fans we do want to see them race and let them do their own thing, yeah, it could be a point where they do regret it, because I still don't really know how, because the car's not been there at this kind of point of the season. But Max is only 12 points behind them, and he should be much further behind. He should be 30 points, if not more. Yeah. And yet he's there and he's lurking. And if Red Bull do sort it out, will McLaren, you know, can McLaren still afford to kind of have those races, say, Oscar's in the lead of the championship and Lando's winning the race, or vice versa? Can they have that situation where they're constantly going, well, it doesn't really matter too much, because they would have looked, it obviously didn't happen in the end, but had you know, Max not had those brilliant drives at the end in Brazil and things like that compared to last year, had Lando lost the championship by 7, 8, 9 points or whatever, you would look back on your Monzas, your Budapests and things like that, where they didn't kind of commit to one car. And Red Bull have that luxury where they know the Max Verstappen will always be the number one driver there and get the most points, so they don't need to worry about the teammate from that side. So yeah, it's going to be, I think that is going to be the fascinating dynamic of the season if it continues the way it is, where McLaren have the best car, but if the drivers keep swapping with who's quicker one week, who's quicker the next week, and Max is the one picking up points, he could kind of stick with them, and it would put a huge amount of pressure on them, I think.
Yeah. As you say, never count out Max Verstappen, even in the current Red Bull. Maybe briefly before we go through the standings, we'll do a couple rapid fires. We haven't talked about LVPs, and I think this is a little bit to me related to the other Red Bull car. So my LVP for the weekend, I guess, was the Pierre Yuki incident. That was unfortunate, especially between two friends and former teammates. You hate to see that. And especially Yuki, who is newly in the seat, wants to prove himself. That's just a very disappointing way to end a weekend. So that was my LVP.
My LVP, and the driver begins with an L, is Lewis Hamilton, because, like I said earlier, finishing over half a minute off your teammate, it's a worrying sign for Hamilton. So I think that is definitely one to mention, because I don't think if I look at other teammate comparisons, there is that same margin between any of them. And then also the post-race interviews afterwards, it was quite it's a sad sight. And it's something that myself and Tommy discussed on our Race Review podcast, about how Hamilton's demeanor has changed over the last few years, especially towards the end of Mercedes and now at Ferrari, where you can see chinks in his armor emotionally. You can see that he's getting proper down about poor performances, and you do wonder, how will he bounce back? So I would say, yeah, it was a poor weekend for Hamilton, and that's why he's my LVP.
Yeah, eking into Q3 by 0.007 of a second over a Williams is tough. You're just seeing him shake his head after quali and being, I think it was a second off pole, is just a really tough thing to see.
Yeah, but, yeah, Lewis, you know, that's got to be one of his worst weekends for a very long time, I think, to be 30 seconds off your teammate is really poor. Another one to throw into the mix, actually, I think, and it's a bit more of a rogue shout, but probably more just to be different than you two, is Jack Doohan. Mm. And I think the fact that Gasly showed what that Alpine could do, and they looked a bit quicker the last few races. And I think Doohan maybe hasn't been as bad as we thought, but in that race, really, really struggled and was absolutely nowhere. And he's another driver that you feel like he's fighting for his seat every single race, with Colapinto kind of waiting in the wings. And it does feel like Alpine don't need a second excuse to kind of get rid of him. And so far, he's not really delivering, I don't think. And that was a really tough race to kind of finish way down the order.
Yeah, gun to your head, is Colapinto in the Alpine seat in the next in this season? Or I know there's also rumors of him floating around the Red Bull organization as well.
He's in the Alpine at some point this season.
Yeah, yeah. I can't see the Red Bull rumors, but I have heard those. But I don't think when he'd signed a 5-year contract to Alpine, for him to break it already would be, are Red Bull spending that much money when they do have young drivers waiting in the wings as well? If they did want to get rid of Lawson, for example. But no, I do think we'll see Colapinto in that Alpine at some point. I think it is a matter of if, not the other way around. Yeah.
Briatore won't let him go that easily to Red Bull.
No.
All right. So to wrap, let's go through the standings and then just maybe some quick rapid fire to round it out. So for the Drivers' Championship, Oscar has taken the lead, 10 points ahead of Lando. He's at 99 with Lando at 89. Again, that can turn around in a single race. We have Max Verstappen breathing down his neck at 87, George Russell 73, Charles Leclerc 47, Kimi Antonelli 38, Lewis 31, Alex Albon 20, Esteban Ocon 14, and Lance Stroll 10. So that's your top 10. And then for constructors, we have McLaren with 188, Mercedes 111, Red Bull 89, Ferrari 78, Williams 25, Haas 20, Aston Martin 10, Racing Bulls 8, and Alpine and Kick Sauber both at 6. So still a lot to play for here, but there are some close battles and I'm excited to watch them. So just to wrap up, a quick rapid fire for you both. First thing that comes to mind, favorite track?
Oh gosh.
Brazil.
Current or all time?
All time.
Ooh, yeah. I mean, Brazil's great, isn't it? It's really good.
It depends whether it's like driving it on a Formula One game, because I don't think Brazil is like the most fun to, if you're like driving it on a Formula One game. But for whatever reason, you just get a good race every single year. And ultimately, as Formula One fans, that's what we want. So I'll say Interlagos.
Oh, that means I have to be different.
You can agree.
Okay, I'll say Malaysia, Sepang. That's okay. One of the best circuits ever, and it's sadly not on the calendar.
Slightly different question. Best race you've been to?
Ooh.
Best race I've been to?
It depends. I think on atmosphere or like a experience. Good race, yeah. Experience.
You can go atmosphere. You can go atmosphere.
Atmosphere. I'll say that, yeah, the we were lucky enough to go to the first race when Zandvoort came back on the calendar and Max won. And to be in a Formula One crowd, you know, we mentioned at the start of the show that you kind of feel like we've grown up with Formula One not being very popular. And I remember going to it's a mad thing to think about, but going to Silverstone when I was a kid, and you could still buy tickets on the door because, you know, they weren't selling out. And to go to a race like that and it be an absolute sellout and them just playing like techno music and flares going off and it just being like a party the whole race was an incredible atmosphere, even if the race was a bit boring.
It's funny that you say that, because I would say the most recent time we went to Zandvoort, because we were lucky enough to be in the paddock and we watched the race when it was absolutely pouring with rain in the Red Bull Hospitalities. We could see a very small amount of car going past around the final corner. But the thing that got me and the thing that I'll always remember is the fact that someone from the Red Bull team came up to us and said, "Do you want to stand under the podium?" And we were like, "Do you want us? Is there someone behind us?" No, they were like, "Yeah, do you want to come along?" And I was like, "Yes." So yeah, we sprint. I've never seen Tom Bellingham move so quickly in my entire life.
I never run. He's never run for that.
Yeah. But he ran for that. And then we got sprayed by Fernando Alonso, which is a wild sentence to say out loud, but we did. And I've not actually washed
You've
my jumper since.
No.
It was utterly brilliant.
Yeah, that was so surreal to kind of be there and that close to the podium and watch the drivers up like right ahead. Was crazy. Yeah, that was.
I was actually on the broadcast as well behind Kelly Piquet. I was looking up at the podium, and then people were screenshotting me, saying, "Lola, there's Matt. What's he doing there behind the Verstappen?"
Matt and Kelly.
Yeah,
I love it. Okay, favorite interview you've done?
Daniel Ricciardo. Times where however many we've done every single time I've spent time with Daniel Ricciardo, and I've been lucky enough to spend maybe 6 or 7 days across my career with him, through filming a random Renault ad to doing a road trip with him where he came along when we were doing this amazing road trip in America. He's just such an amazing guy, and he is what you get on camera, and then he's even more wild off camera, if that's even something you can imagine. But such a lovely bloke as well, and one thing that I kind of always use as a measure of, you know, how down to earth a driver is or whatever, is if they take an interest in you as well, rather than it just always being a one-sided conversation. Yes. How's the season going so far, blah blah blah. You know, Daniel would turn around and go, how's the podcast going, how's this going, and I'm like, oh my god, he cares about me. So yeah, Danny Rick.
I've heard that I'll from everybody for, yeah.
Oh yeah, he is the loveliest man. Just be different, I will go Carlos Sainz, because that interview was such a proud moment. Because sometimes with I'm sure you have this with like creating content and stuff, you can have something that goes really, really well, and then, you know, maybe it doesn't get backed up with views, or sometimes something that you think won't be great goes massive, and sometimes it feels like a crazy thing. But the Carlos Sainz interview that we did, I remember finishing that interview and thinking, oh my word, that is one of the best things we've ever done. Wow. That we had a whole hour with him. He was so, you know, to have a driver for that long and him just like open up to us. And aside to Carlos, I think a lot of people hadn't even seen before. You know, he was dropping like, you know, funny faces about memes and things like that. And his manager afterwards was saying, oh, you know, he's so animated, and he seemed to really enjoy that. And it was such a proud moment to kind of have that. And then now for it to go on the channel and see the reaction to it, and everything just went, you know, all the social clips went massive. The video is still our biggest video we've ever done. That was
a
really cool moment.
We're working very hard for part two this year as well.
Yeah.
It's in the works, let's put it that way. So fingers crossed.
I loved that interview you guys did with him. It was incredible.
Thank you.
Also a testament to your interviewing skills, I will say. It's not easy to get someone to open up, especially a driver who has done how many interviews, you know, and so much media.
I think you could just sense the just F1 nerd within both of us, where we're just like, tell us more about this. I think he appreciates that.
Okay, last one. Who's winning the 2025 World Drivers Championship?
Charles Leclerc. No. Sorry. Wow. I thought I was in pre-season prediction mode again. Who is winning the world championship? Go on, Tommy. You're going to say Max Verstappen, so you just get that out of the way first.
It's weird because I am going to change my mind after every single race based on the Red Bull. So if you'd have asked me this after Bahrain, I'd have said Oscar Piastri. After this weekend, I'll go Max, maybe. I'm not like 100% confident, but...
It's okay. We knew you were going to say that.
I think I'm being a bit delusional. But I do think you can't write him off, and the fact that he's been this close when the car's not there, I think, is a good sign.
It's funny, isn't it? Because at the start of the year, before everything began, we did our pre-season predictions, and both of us said Max Verstappen will win the world title. And the amount of people that were like, guys, what are you smoking? That's crazy. Max, look
he's
at
his
car.
He's in the fourth car. Best car.
Terrible.
Yeah.
And then it was so weird. I almost felt like I was becoming a Max fan. And when I was like pulling out a smug face going, yeah, Max has just won. Guys, come on. You can't write him off. For me, I, you know, now looking after you know, five races, I think Oscar Piastri might do it. You know, I genuinely do. Just purely from, you know, if this is the form that we see, yeah, Lando could get some wins and I think it will be close. But if Oscar has this sort of almost just a level that he constantly delivers at, it might be thirds, it might be seconds, it might be first, just throughout the whole season, with one mistake so far, which is in Australia, which I put down to him being slightly unlucky and when you compare to how Lando went off, which was very similar, he's delivering at a very consistent level, which we see world champions born from. So right now, Oscar Piastri, but after, you know, Miami, it'll change. And after Monaco and Charles Leclerc wins, Ferrari are back.
It's going to be Charles Leclerc.
Who do you think?
I'm going to go with Lando Norris.
Oh, okay.
I'm
all being
be different.
Love it.
I could definitely see either Max or Oscar, of course, getting it. But I think Lando has the car and I think he will be able to stand up to the pressure. And I do agree that on his day, he has the edge over Oscar Piastri. And I hope that he is able to prove that.
Yeah, he just needs to lock it in and do it more often than not.
Exactly. Well, Matt, Tommy, thank you so much for joining. This was such a nice morning for me, afternoon for you. But
yeah, thank
really
you so much for having us on.
Thank you.
Coming on. Thank you. We'll chat soon.
Absolutely.
Okay, and now for the F1 Academy recap. So they conducted 3 days of in-season testing at Jeddah before the weekend, and then they raced here, obviously. So quali, for race one, just as a reminder, it's the top eight that get reversed to start that race, and then race two is in the standard order. Quali is a 30-minute session. One of the main highlights, or I guess lowlights, was Leah Block crashing and causing a red flag. It was the same exact issue that Yuki had in FP2. It was really sweet to see Susie go straight to the ARC Grand Prix team pit wall immediately to check and make sure that she was okay. Just an absolute goat, as always. Dorianne had struggled all session, but jumped up to provisional pole in the last 5 minutes. And then Chloe Chambers came out of nowhere, got an incredible toe to claim pole, and she was super excited. It was really fun to hear her on the radio. So our top three was Chloe Chambers, Dorian Pant, and Maya Vug. Emma Felbermeyer finished P8, so she was pole for the reverse grid race, followed by Ella Lloyd. And for race one, this was the reverse grid start. The top three, like I mentioned, was Emma Felbermeyer, Ella Lloyd, and Alba Larson. So a really fun top three, all rookies for this. Incredible launch off the line from Ella, who took the lead immediately. It was a clean first corner. Alicia Palmowski also found her way from fifth to third pretty immediately. Leah Block then unfortunately had a spin and Chloe Chong ended in the wall, causing a safety car, which was brutal for Ella Lloyd, who had started to build a lead. There was a 10-second penalty for Courtney Crone for causing a collision there as well. And then big pass using the toe from Ella Lloyd for Maya Vug to take second from Alicia Palmowski. Dorian Pan was fighting super hard to get onto the podium after passing Alba Larson. And it was actually cool to see on the broadcast that the CEO of F2 and F3 was watching. I love to see that, especially because that is the goal for most of these women, is to make it out of F1 Academy and into the feeder series, the F3s, the F2s of the world. So that was fun to see that he was keeping an eye there. Ella Lloyd did manage to hold on to the win after an amazing charge from Maya Vug. It was really close, but Ella became the first McLaren to ever win at this track, which is insane. Obviously, we did end up having another McLaren win in Oscar Piastri during the race, but so cool for Ella and a great weekend overall for McLaren. Then race two, Chloe Chambers led from pole. She held off Dorian Penn into turn one. This race got a little bit spicy at the end with Chloe Chambers holding on under pressure to cross the line first, but was later investigated for safety car infringement. So post-race, Chambers received a 5-second penalty, which dropped her down, and Maya Voog inherited the win, and then Dorian Penn also was on podium. So our standings for F1 Academy after two race weekends so far is Maya Voog in the lead with 59 points, Dorian Penn with 52, Chloe Chambers with 47, Alicia Palmowski with 36, and Alba Larson with 28. So with that, thank you all for joining, and cannot believe the next race is Miami. I will be there, as I have mentioned, got lots of fun things planned. But if there's anything that you want to see from my end, types of content, questions you have, what's the experience like behind the scenes, let me know, because I'm planning it all right now, and it's going to be a fun one.